you go back to our Catholic upbringing and days.
We call it a job in grad school. It's really piss off the nuns.
Exactly.
The Book of Job.
We got a great story about the nuns for sure. Yeah, but my mother said to me, she said, you know, you may find that you may live the life of Job, because Job lost everything.
Yeah.
And how prophetic that was, that with by the time of her death, that's what had happened in that one calendar year. All of these, from March 7th to March 7th, five people that meant the most to me in my life had passed away. It was this strange, strange thing. So, but I just, it brings me to the point where in a panic with my son, you know, I've seen all this and I worry about him all the time.
24/7.
Because it's like, oh God, you know, what's that? And he bought a motorcycle and he's doing this, and I'm like, yeah, it's great. You got to live, you know, just be careful. And you're always.
Well, you drive a motorcycle.
Well, yeah.
You drive a Harley, so he's going to buy a Harley.
Yeah.
But so you would say, I'm glad he bought a Harley. That's cool, but fuck, man. I don't want him on driving, necessarily riding it.
Yeah.
You guys go out riding together, right?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. We have done that.
Well, that's cool. You get to do that. That's fucking something special.
We haven't taken a big trip yet. That's a thing I want to do.
Yeah.
So, get some
test stuff. Him out on the road. See what he can do. See how he does after a week on the road, if he can keep his shit together.
Yeah. The very first time we did go out and he got his license and we're like, oh, we're going for a ride. And I pull into this parking lot. It's gravel. And I'm not really thinking because I've got miles and miles and miles. And it's his first time. Well, he pulls into this gravel lot and, man, that wheel turns, locks up, dumps and throws him into gravel, you know. It's like, oh, here we go, you know. But it was a great learning.
That's how you learn, right? Yeah,
exactly.
What do you do with, you get here without having strong faith? Could you have made it through this? Are you still, a lot of people say they're recovering Catholics. Some people say they're practicing Catholics, whatever it takes, but does faith help you get through this at all? Or
yeah, definitely. It definitely does. If you didn't have faith, you know, you're just another piece of wood floating in the ocean.
Driftwood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it's not tangible. It's not anything that you can grab a hold of or whatever, but it was, well, you go back to those nuns, they taught us about that, what that meant. And I think if that sunk in, then you got it. And once you get it and you understand it, you can get through anything. You can get through anything. So I always think about the nuns teaching us, you know, this is what faith means. And then I think I probably had to write it 1,000 times on the blackboard or something.
Yeah, so probably more than that.
but that kind of thing, you know, when your young mind is putting things together, I think that was important. And I feel bad that, you know, a lot of people may not have that opportunity to understand what real faith is. They got to get it from someone who can show them. And, you know, with my family, I took them to church every Sunday, you know, and we would talk about it afterwards and go have breakfast. And it was, you know, that's the kind of life and upbringing that, you know, that's why it's sometimes difficult to swallow the pill that, you know, my daughter died of addiction from an evil drug. And, you know, what kind of life did she have growing up that, you know, maybe made her make those decisions? And it's none of that, you know. So you can do all the right things and evil will come in. And that's the faith is the antithesis of evil. So that's why I know that it works, because that's where the answers are. And some people might say, "Well, that's, you know, you're really out there with that one," but it truly is how you can gain strength to move on. And it is faith for sure, no doubt.
How do you put myself in your shoes on social media, on Facebook? I haven't been on Facebook in the last 21 days. We've been on the road, so I haven't even looked at Facebook. But how do you, I put myself in your shoes, how do you fucking put up with people who just constantly brag about their kids and this kid did this in college, this kid's doing this in life, and all the things. I think parents fucking are a pain in the ass. They overbrag about their kids. That's the right, I guess. But I put myself in your shoes, and I said, I would be sitting there saying, you don't know how fucking lucky you are. Even the parents who complained about their kids, right?
Yeah.
This kid's, it's like, yeah. I mean, how do you, I know this is kind of an out-of-the-box question, but I thought about it a lot. I don't think I would say, I'm done on this thing. Like, how do you navigate social media or just anybody who complains about their kid doing this stupid whatever, seems insignificant. The parents don't even realize how fortunate they are to have healthy kids and whether they're achieving up to the parents, whatever, you know. Just the fact that they have a healthy kids who are alive and able to do whatever. How do you put up with these people? Do you navigate
it? I'll tell you, when I see that, the first thing I do is cry.
Why? I mean, because
I just cry.
You think they're lost?
No, I cry because I won't be able to enjoy that.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so then I get past the cry, and then I go to the, like, a prayer. Like, I pray for you that you can continue to enjoy your child for as long and as forever, and hopefully that you die before they do.
Yeah.
And that's what I do when I see that. And it is extremely difficult to look at that and see that, because I know. So that's a great question, you know, but that's all I can do now is mourn for her loss. And I used to promote things that my son had done on that. And I got to thinking, you know, it's his life and he does his things. And I'll just, you know, if anything, I'll promote the fact that I've got a son that I got to spend time with, you know, more than anything that he could do that would be, you know, wonderful, great, super, whatever. You know, that's where I focus that now too. And if there's people that I know and they post things, you know, it's like, oh, it's great to see what your son's doing or whatever and so forth. And I hope you guys get to spend a lot of time together, you know, and that's what it is. And your opportunity that you had to spend with your son is like, I think that's super awesome.
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah.
So.
You know, I try not to say anything about it because I want to be sensitive to you, right? But it's been good. It's been good. Yeah.
Well, I enjoy it. He's there, and he's living that life with you, and capturing things that you can see him. You see that you can give to him. You know, because kids need that. They need to be given things, and give everything you can whenever you can, even if it is like a crack on the head with something, you know, like, hey, you know.
Well, you know me, we bust a lot of chops in my house. It is nonstop. So there's no, mean, there's no respect whatsoever. There's very few limits. Even, you know, my wife, we all went to school together, and just so it drives her crazy. We just continually beat the shit out of each other on a regular basis. There's no, everything is, it's just the way it is. I mean, it's the way, they're quick-witted, and I don't want them to go to waste, so we keep everybody sharp, except for my wife. She refuses to participate. She's a Western PA product, like you are, and so she was born and bred differently than I was. Without an old man, you're kind of a wild animal in the woods, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have that the basis. Without an old man. So you just kind of, you don't know where there are a lot of limits. You don't really know how to behave. You don't, you know, a dad is a dad. Yeah. And, but I asked you that question because I see that happen a lot on social media. And I know you're on there. And then I see you post a lot about your daughter on social media. And those must be particularly tough times for you when you sit down and you write about your daughter. You write several paragraphs about her, and I'm thinking, he's having a bad fucking go of it right now, bad week, bad whatever, you know?
Well, it's that's my catharsis with that. And by doing that, I'm hoping sometimes to touch something in other people that they could understand, you know, what it means to have a living daughter and not be a member of the dead daughter club that some people have called it, you know. It's so many crazy things out there. But that's what's important to me, to try to share those moments, the feelings. I've had the blessing to be able to write some things, and I've published some articles for work, and I try to give that information to people so that they can find something to grab a hold of if they need it. And that's my intent when I do that. And sometimes I'm like, these people probably don't want to hear me say all this stuff again and talk about that. And I'm thinking, you know what, this is the only way I have to memorialize my daughter, and I'm going to put it out there and do that. And that's the other aspect of what I try to do, is try to keep her spirit alive and share it. And that's the intent. So that's where I'm at with the social media. Sometimes take it or leave it, but I see it as the great neutralizer in a lot of things. And you find out exactly where people are, where they stand.
What do you mean?
So in the neutralization part is that when a thought is start bouncing around out there, you're going to get the response of people on both sides of the spectrum. They're going to comment one way or the other.
Yeah.
And then that needle starts to point one way or the other based on the additional comments that go. And then the threads start to come to this point where I believe that it's probably the true representation of time and thought all in one spot. So that's how I see it. And even in work, we've had some situations where there's a 33-hour, I think it was the longest we ever had, which was a back-and-forth dealing with a public safety issue and people wanting to know, you know, why and what and what's going on.
You mean like a hostage?
The
hostage thing?
No, it was dealing with some chemical-related evacuations in an area.
Yeah.
So they like, why do I have to do this? And when, you know, and the government's doing this and that and whatever. And you know, you're leading them through it for their safety. So But again, the truth comes out, and people actually comment, and they're like, well, this is why they're doing it, and this is why they have to do it, and or, you know, these are other facts that you may not be aware of. And so we've used it to neutralize situations, and it's worked very well with that. But the moment you would censure something or whatever, forget it, you're gonna blow it up.
Yeah.
So you're better off, no matter how long it takes, you work through it, and I believe you'll find the and you know everything that's occurred with our country in the last 2 years, it's the same thing. You know, you find out where people are, where they're at, what their thoughts and what they think is right. And you always come out in the middle somewhere, and you'll see it if you pay attention, and you have half a brain, you'll understand.
You have to pay attention. No, that's the ticket. So yeah. Many people don't.
They have short attention.
Some people don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
You probably ask yourself this question a trillion times. What would you have done differently as a dad?
I think it's, you want to say that you would have been there for every moment, but it's impossible. So then you debate yourself. The only thing different is how could I have inserted myself between the drug dealer and her? And I don't know how you would do that. So I can't really put my finger on anything that I would do different. I think I did everything I possibly could to love my daughter and steer her in the right direction. And even some of her writings, I believe she outlines that, you know, she had the best life and everything was great. And, you know, and it's still, the evil came in and took her away. So I don't know that there's anything I could have done different. And you can't become a helicopter parent, and you can't change the forces that you can't see, you know, that are out there. They obviously were a part of this. People, you know, some of it too is you know, parenting. You know, there might have been disagreements in the parenting, and you'd think, you know, what you did was right. So, and I think both parents think that. So,
I mean, you're being too strict, and you better back off, or you're not being strict enough. And so
yeah,
there's a right. Yin and yang and somewhere in there.
Right. Right. So, you know, you look at all of those discussions and decisions and everything too. And you keep coming back to the part that you did everything you could. And I don't think you could have done anything different. And if you did, you know, what other set of circumstances would befall you anyways? So, you know, retrospect is always a road that, you know, you better watch. If you want to travel that road, you know, you might find other things that it could have been worse. I don't know what could have been worse, but you know, it's just, yeah, I could have killed the guy who sold her the drugs. You know, I could look back at that, you know, that wasn't the answer, so.
Seems like a good option, though, at a certain time, and then you move past it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go there, if you don't have a son, do you entertain that thought more than you did?
I think that somebody that doesn't have anything else, you know, out there. That,
yeah.
You know, I had a career, and I had a son, and I had, you know, those things and a great support group. So there I am able to
move past
those things, you know. And I tried the therapy thing. It was...
How does that work?
You went
to therapy for, like, they said, well, you know, you have to talk to somebody because you're not doing well, and then just, you go to therapy. You probably put the fucking therapist under. You probably had the therapist lying on the couch.
That's a great story. I went there, and we started the discussion, and before you know it, I corrected his marriage. I corrected his relationship between him and his father. Helped him understand how to make decisions about buying
this
a
is
vehicle.
Like a professional therapist.
Yeah.
Who's, that's what I said. You'd have the fuck. You'd be sitting in the chair. You mind if I sit in the chair? You can lay on the couch.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And then he said he used to ride a motorcycle, but he wasn't going to do it anymore. And I was like, well, why? And, you know, so it's truly what occurred. So I'm, you know.
So you got a whole lot out of therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Zero. It was zero. I did feel good because I helped a guy out, you know, but that if that's where all of that resides, then I don't see it as a gainful proposition for me. And I think the faith was the overarching therapy that carried me through. So a lot of great people along the way that helped me see the light. So
you don't necessarily have a message for other parents. You said the message you have is just let your kids know that you love them. You feel that once it gets to a certain level, it doesn't matter. You can't do much.
There is nothing.
How fucking powerful it is?
Yeah, there is nothing. There is, trust me, if there is something that can be done about something, I will do it.
I know, yeah, I know that.
Make it happen. Yeah. And I tried everything. I went as far in every direction that I could possibly mentally, you know, take it. And there is nothing there other than tell them you love them. And I am so fortunate. My last three words to my daughter were, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we were going into the city to celebrate a friend's birthday for the night. And I said, you know, you're good, everything's good. Yeah, it's great. I'm going to, you know, do this, do that, and whatever. And that night, she made that text, and, you know, it all happened. And I was in the city for the night, and I got the call.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Arizona. Yeah.
From my ex-wife, and she told me. And I said, well, grab our son, and we got to get there. And then when I showed up, you know, every person that I had worked with in the last 15 years, you know, police, fire, emergency medical, coroner, you know, the detectives, attorney general's office, everybody I knew was standing there. And that's
what... I know from the last name. Well, yeah. What's going on? Yeah, you know, your last name's not Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, and... Well, and even, you know, I know all of the dispatchers, you know, everybody knew.
So you put the word out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they covered every inch of the house immediately. You know, they says, you know, can we have your permission? I'm like, yes, we're gonna figure this out. And they were able to find things, and within 24 hours, they were able to link it to another incident that occurred, and then they found out, you know, what was going on, and then followed it out. And so that's how we ended up getting a conviction and, you know, something
her. To grab onto. Yeah.
And it was because I had all of those great people there to do that. And they do it for everyone, but I know that there was a lot of people that helped me specifically. So I can't ever thank them enough for that. And then I get back to the detective. He lost his life, you know, before he got to see the case come to fruition.
Yeah. But, those guys, they put the hours in. They little things. I'm working cases, little something, a small detail in your notes could take you a week to run down. One line could take you a week. So if you're looking at this guy's notes, just hours and hours and hours of being running down leads and turning over rocks and everything else, trying to find guys like this. Because they use burner phones and they use everything. People say, well, if you have the text, just trace the phone. It's not fucking, this isn't, okay, this isn't television.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, there is nothing that equals that in any shape. Yeah, that's for sure. And even as the case developed into, the decision had to be made, whether it be a jury trial or whether it would be a bench trial, you know, and I mean, I
who went, makes that call? You do?
Yeah.
You made that call.
Yeah.
You went with what? Bench.
Yeah. And so you want to find
why
out.
Why do you go with bench? I think I know why, but.
Yeah, because this, the way that the defendant would be put in front of the jury and the opportunity for the defense to paint a picture of him. And also, I believe they could have painted a picture of my daughter and said, well, you know, she was in rehab and she had used, and, you know, this was probably the course of events that would occur, you know, eventually, you know, and there's so many things that you run through your mind. And I just felt that a judge, the right judge, obviously, this is where it needs to go.
Did you get the right judge?
I didn't
that's
think
a
so. Fucker.
That's a no. Yeah, that's a no.
Right, yeah. That's a no. So
that's a, if there's a, you know, if you got to think about that question, the answer is no.
But it's the strangest moment. I got a glimpse out of him at one point when he was, I was like at the corner of the door going into the courtroom, and he was going back in because he was going to back to his chambers. And I got a glimpse from him that told me something that, you know, there might be a chance, and I would have never expected that from this guy, what I knew about him, you know.
Did he put this guy away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's probably fucking terrified. You don't, you know, of your so-called glimpse. You don't have a glimpse. You have a fucking glare. That's not a glimpse. I mean, you might think that you're glimpsing at people, but they're glimpsing at you, but you have a glare. You know, you can be a little bit intimidating without saying anything. And I don't know. I figured you would go with a bench trial because that would be a way you could protect Rachel, and because they'd fucking drag her through the mud and paint her as, you know, and here's the thing people don't realize about court. Many times with defense cases, the best liar wins.
Yeah.
They could say anything they want. She's not even around to defend herself or tell prosecutors that's not true, whatever. And they could say anything they want. Once they say it in front of a jury, even if it gets struck from the record, it's still in the jury's mind. And you'd have to live through that fucking soup from somebody trying to save their own skin and then stand there at sentencing and say, oh, I'm so sorry. If you were so sorry, you know, why did you put on a big defense and besmirch my daughter? So that's why I figured you went with a bench. One of the reasons you went with a bench trial.
Yeah, there's still a big debate because, you know, the judge may want to just run through this. Maybe the judge wants to make a statement. Maybe the judge wants to, you know, show that he has a certain compassion